Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow. Thanks for being with us. With you for the next 60 minutes, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to get to some of the latest news surrounding the team as the team will return to practice today as they prepare for the next preseason game against the New York Jets. Let's start, though, Paul, with Ben McAdoo's conference call that he had with the media yesterday to review his thoughts on the second preseason game, but most important, talk about the latest injury news. And he was not necessarily detailed and specific about the injuries to Odell Beckham and Brandon Marshall. Day-to-day is the term that he used, that they're going to evaluate both. The MRI was being taken on Odell Beckham yesterday. Brandon Marshall and Odell Beckham also had x-rays. They both came back negative. That we know based on what Ben McAdoo said. But, I mean, it's really open-ended at this point. There's no specifics.
No, and quite honestly, as is the case with any injury of this kind, it truly is a day-to-day wait-to-see thing, because until the player starts passing certain litmus tests or hurdles in his rehab, you can't possibly know how the results of those tests are going to be. And I'll give you a great example, okay? Let's say you're a basketball player, okay, and you tweak your ankle. Well, usually the doctor's going to say, all right, we'll wait for the swelling to go down, we'll check out the tests, and then maybe after a few days, we're going to have you get back on the court and maybe at least go up and down the court a few times and see what happens. Well, that's the next litmus test. If you have pain or there's more swelling, oh, we got to shut them down. Okay, now the schedule starts getting real, and it's usually going to be elongated. But if after they let you go up and down the court a few times and you're feeling okay, well, all of a sudden, now the schedule gets real in a good way, because now they're saying, all right, well, then maybe tomorrow we're going to let you jog a little bit. And then maybe in two more days, we're going to let you actually practice. And so every injury of this type, I'm not talking about like if a guy literally rips an ACL. I mean, that's different. I mean, yeah, he's out a long time. But any of these other soft tissue injuries or sprained ankles, things of this nature, usually there is a very simple progress report that's going to happen every few days. And at any time during that chain, there could be a break, which sets the guy back. Or the chain just flows very well, the guy heals very well, and before you know it, he's out there and everything is as good as new. For example, Sterling Shepard. Boy, there were some reports that went out there immediately that said Sterling Shepard was in a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Turned out it was just a rolled ankle, and he missed a week of time, and then all of a sudden, just like that, they asked him to go out there and do some straight sprints. He passed the test. Next day, go out there and do some individuals. Passed the test. Next practice, go out there and run some routes. He passed the test. Okay, so you'll play in the second preseason game. And he did. Folks, that's the way these things go. Every couple of days, the medical staff will ask the guy, how do you feel? And do you want to take it to the next step? And only if he experiences some type of setback can you then determine, all right, guess what? Now we're looking at an elongated situation. Until that happens for real, okay, could rain today too, folks.
Yeah.
It really could. Maybe, whatever.
Well, what you just laid out basically translates to there's a lot of time between now and the start of the regular season.
A lot.
And a lot could happen.
A lot.
And we'll leave it at that. September 10th is the opener against the Cowboys. We're 2 weeks away from this Saturday when they played the Jets in terms of the true two-week timetable. So we got a little bit more than that, and we'll see what happens with respect to both players.
Let me be even more frank with you. Until the 90 minutes before kickoff against the Dallas Cowboys, when that list is submitted for inactives, nobody's going to know if Odell Beckham Jr. is playing in that game or otherwise. Case closed.
And I wouldn't even read into whether or not some of these players suit up for Saturday's game, given the fact that it's such a quick turnaround, and you
means
would think
nothing.
Most teams, correct, are going to be conservative anyway. And I'm not just referring to Brandon Marshall and Odell Beckham. I'm also referring to Tavares King, who, by the way, Ben McAdoo confirmed he did re-aggravate that ankle that he initially had to deal with that kept him out of the first preseason game, and then Michael Hunter's in concussion protocol. So all four of those players, given the fact that we're only a few days away from the next preseason game, if none of them play, I don't think it's necessarily going to be surprising. The other newsworthy item to get to is the Giants just announced that they made a few transactions. So they have waived a pair of offensive linemen. They waived Michael Bowie and Corin Brooks, and they waived injured wideouts Darius Powell as well as Andrew Terzilli, who was the local product out of Rutgers. Powell, though, remember, was on the practice squad last year. Unfortunately, he's dealing with the injury bug, and we were talking about this on yesterday's program, Paul. Golden opportunity if he was still on the roster with everybody else banged up, but he himself is hurt.
He has been on the bike for the past week or so at practice, and that's just not a good sign when there are roster spots to be had. And he now finds himself on the outside looking in.
So they brought in a pair of wide receivers and a pair of offensive linemen to take the place of those four players. They brought in Marquise Bundy and CJ Germany, as well as linemen Richard Levy and Matt Rotherham. Three of those guys were associated with some professional teams, including NFL teams, but they were waived over the last few months. So it's an opportunity for them to get in the mix, but obviously a very short timetable for anybody coming in right now, Paul, to make an immediate indentation or impact on this team.
Well, more importantly, teams are looking to make sure they have full rosters because they still do have practices during camp, even though it's not really camp anymore. They still do have practices, and they still do have four quarters to play this week and four quarters to play next week. So that's eight quarters of football that you want to play. And as we know, the rosters were kept at 90 through the four preseason games this year, in part because the owners did not want to see their starting guys getting hurt. So, you know, you do need to have the back of that roster full so you have guys to take snaps.
Well, eight quarters certainly still alive and well, but practice time-wise, they're getting down to the nitty-gritty, Paul. I mean, they're practicing today and tomorrow, and
yeah.
Friday's off before the Saturday game, and then Monday, Tuesday, and then they got to leave for New England on Wednesday. So we're talking
about the
oddball
days with the games does throw a chink into that.
I mean, you literally have four practices left before the final preseason game, but the preseason games certainly are important, an opportunity to make quite a statement. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. You want to discuss the roster, injury news, everything's up for discussion with us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, and we get the festivities started as we welcome in Phil in North Carolina. Phil, what's happening?
Yes, hi, guys.
How are we doing, Phil?
Hi.
Three things, real quick. And first, let me say that I think the Giants should really try to explore trades for defensive ends. Trading out one of our defensive ends or D-line guys to another team for areas of that we really need. And I know you're going to come back with the cliche, you need partners, and of course you do. But, you know, it's really apparent that, we're not the best in terms of trading. There's other teams more aggressive, and I'd like to see us improve on that.
Well, what position, though, Phil, exactly are you looking for, just out of curiosity, in terms of a trade?
Well, the obvious one.
Well, I figured that was the one you were going to, but let me just throw something out to you, Phil. All right. We were talking about many teams across the NFL landscape do not have a lot of depth on the offensive line, right? So we're 2 weeks away from the start of the regular season. If I'm a team and I've got five starters that I'm toying with and I still have question marks of my own, what makes you think that a team is going to get rid of a starting caliber offensive lineman 2 weeks before the start of the season? Case in point, the Philadelphia Eagles just made a trade with the Seattle Seahawks. George Fant, the starting left tackle for Seattle, went down. He tore his ACL. The Eagles gave up Matt Tobin, who's not one of their starters. He's their backup offensive lineman who's played guard and tackle. So if you're going to make a trade, at best, to me, you're going to maybe acquire a backup swing type of offensive lineman. Teams are not giving up starting caliber offensive linemen.
The truth is, both of you guys are missing the boat. The Giants' biggest need right now is in the back seven on defense because they're extremely thin. They badly could use a linebacker, so if you were going to make a deal with a defensive lineman, I'd be trying to get a linebacker back in the deal or potentially somebody to help out the secondary. Because right now, those are the two thinnest spots on this team. You're totally missing the boat if you think they got to trade for an offensive lineman.
Well, I don't think I'm missing a boat, but I don't disagree necessarily that we could use help in the linebacker in the corner area. So I don't disagree with you, but I would put in the top three. I would put it all in area need.
But as Lance said, you're not going to get anything back at O-line.
You could use a running back, too. I mean, I'm not convinced on our running back stable. You know, we don't have a monster. You know, I know the jury's still out, but, you know, I'm a little concerned with our running backs. So that's another area. Or I would take a draft pick. The key is I don't want to see a wasted fellow, because we are deep in that area, you know, just go and for us to get zero out of it. We can't afford to do that.
Well, keep in mind, when they've had some depth or options, I mean, the best example is probably in the kicking game recently. You know, we were talking about this the other day, where they traded Brandon McManus because they felt that they had a young kicker who they knew wasn't going to win the job, but they figured they'd get some value for him. We've seen it with Ryan Grant, if you go back many years, in terms of what he became with the Green Bay Packers. So, I mean, it's not unheard of for the Giants to maybe make a trade if they feel, you know what, this guy's not going to make the team. Maybe we get something in return. But once again, I don't think you're going to get a starting caliber player back before the start of the season in return for, you know, your fourth defensive end or your fifth running back. I think that you have to at least have reality set in from that standpoint.
No. I agree. You're not going to get a starter. But,
yeah.
You know, maybe you can get a quality guy that may develop it down the road.
So, I don't think that's unheard of.
Something. Yeah. So that was item one. I'm sorry. I'll go run through these really quick. And so item two is, you know, I am not in the camp that Eric Flowers had a good game the other day, and I'll tell you why. Not because of that. I don't count that sack, because that he did a good job on that. But in the initial first two series, he could have easily got called for holding twice. He basically strangled the Garrett.
I saw the plays you're talking about, and no disagreement that he went high around the neck, and that's not good technique, but he didn't get called. And quite honestly, offensive linemen, as you know, they always say they could get called on every play. So the fact that the laundry didn't fly, and that's two games now where he's not gotten called for a penalty, that's a good sign.
Well, it's too close for comfort, I guess.
I understand.
I
understand.
I didn't see any punching. I didn't see any, you know, punching out there on those plays. I think he did punch a little bit later, but right off the bat, he didn't do enough hand work, and that's, you would think he would learn by now. But the other comment I'll have on the tackles, I thought the two backup guys, Wheeler, definitely came back with a better week this week. That was encouraging. So. And I guess my last thing, I'll take it off the air, is the, there's a lot of concern about the O-line, and I think it's justified. And so I would ask you guys to not be so dismissive when the fans call, like last week, I think it was last week. be a little open-minded on their perspective, and maybe give the fan sometimes the benefit of the doubt.
Well, in fairness, though, how are we being dismissive if we've been talking about it offseason, though, Phil? I mean,
well, you're talking about it because people are bringing it up all the time.
Yeah, but here's my question, though. When you throw out the term dismissive, that means that basically it's not being discussed and it's being covered up. And, you know, once again, the options are what the options are. DJ Fluker, Ben McAdoo was asked about that. Maybe they'll look to throwing him in place of John Jerry in this next game to experiment, perhaps if they want to see different options on the right side of the offensive line. But short of that, you know, I mean, do you really think realistically that Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart are going to be benched for Adam Biznavati and Chad Wheeler in week one of the regular season? I mean, my point is, when you throw out the term dismissive, we also have to be realistic in terms of what options are in play. And I think it's unrealistic, even if you're not confident of the offensive line, to think that they're going to bench five starters right now on the offensive line.
No, okay. I take back the point of just the word dismissive. You got a good point, Lance. I would say maybe understanding.
Well, I think that the conversation has shown that it's completely understanding in terms of when the fans bring up points that there needs to be improvement. The coaching staff has been on the record saying there needs to be improvement. But I think in fairness, I think you got to look at improvement across the board with the whole offensive line, as opposed to just pinpointing one specific player, when clearly I think there's been some issues here or there across the board.
Yeah.
Hey, look, we'd
all love to see Jumbo Elliott and Carl Nelson and Roman Oben and Brad Benson and Rosie Brown, if you like. We'd all love to see those guys playing for this year's team, but that's not reality. I mean, it's just the way it is. So, to keep complaining about it isn't going to help anybody.
Well, I guess we're hoping that somebody up top hears the echo. So, but besides that, as a closing out, thank you very much. I love the show. Love the work you guys do, and I appreciate it.
All right,
okay?
Phil, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing
in. Okay, thank you.
You got it. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your tweets. We'll get to more of your phone calls as well. Did you want to add something with respect to that?
I would only say the games that Brett Jones and DJ Fluker had the other night, they were markedly better.
And McAdoo mentioned that during his conference call.
And that's why I think it's important to say, because when asked about those guys, McAdoo did go out of his way to mention their improvement and went as far as to say, while he doesn't have any loss of confidence in John Jerry or anyone else on that offensive line, he certainly made note that those two guys made some push. And, whether or not that manifests itself in some more first-team snaps for either one of them, or whether or not they can get a push and get some more snaps in the game against the Jets in week 3, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if McAdoo knows right now either. Maybe he's upstairs at the moment thinking about those things. But the point is, he's open to watching how this fluid situation plays out. He's not going to sit there and say, My starting five, that's it. I'm closing my eyes, and there's going to be nothing else anybody can do about it. No, he's not going to do that. And if a guy like Fluker, who I've been talking about for how many months, makes a push, coach is going to let him make that push. And if he should find his way into the starting lineup because he has earned it, more power to him.
I want to read the exact quotes, just so for those of you who may not have heard the conference call or seen the transcript. These are two questions that Ben McAdoo was asked back-to-back just to set up the proper context. First question was, how did offensive lineman Brett Jones and DJ Fluker do in last night's game? Here was his answer, quote, I think they both had solid outings. They both got better. They both improved. Brett is a tremendous communicator out there. He's a physical player. He had a nice night. Fluker's a guy that he's learning. He's playing a couple of different spots. He's learning the offense still. He's working hard through it. He's a physical football player, and when he gets his hands on somebody, he's a physical man, end quote. The follow-up question then was, and this is the key one, has Fluker earned an opportunity to work with the first team? John Jerry seems to have struggled. McAdoo's answer, quote, we're going to look at those options, talk through them as the week goes on, see how it shakes out, but we have not lost confidence in John Jerry or anybody on the offensive line for that matter, end quote.
Bottom line, we talked about this all offseason. The competition on the depth chart behind those five starters has increased. It is a better room than what it was last year. So there is potential for these backups to at least push somebody in the starting lineup. When, I hate to say it, the last few years prior, the backups were in no position to push anybody.
Well, and that was based on the options. Now, as I mentioned, I think we've brought this up multiple times, Fluker, the fact that he can play tackle and guard gives them one guy that has some versatility, and Brett Jones can play center and guard. So between those two options, Paul, you really can fill up all five positions on the offensive line if you wanted to make tweaks. And I don't know if in previous seasons you can make the argument that they had two reliable options who had starting experience, by
right.
the way, that could be mixed and matched in terms of guard, tackle, or center guard. That I think they have currently on paper, at least.
Agreed.
And that I think is a big step forward. All right, let's head back to the phone lines as we move along here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Dave in Cranford. Dave, what's happening?
How are you guys?
Hi.
Doing well, Dave. What do you got for us?
Good. Hey, two things, and Paul, you just touched on one of them, but I also just want to mention, hey, look, injuries are just part of the preseason, and it's just stuff that you have to deal with. It's not pretty, but we tend to focus only on our team. But if you look at what's going on in Dallas right now, in particular, we spent some time in the off season talking about them redoing their secondary. They've had a hard time keeping a lot of their rookie cornerbacks on the field in practice. Mm-hmm. And if their starting corner gets suspended for a game, they're going to have a really hard time fielding you know, a team on defense in the secondary that's going to have much experience having played together. And those are just things every team has to deal with, and we're going to have to deal with it in certain areas, and that's what goes on, and that's what the coaches get paid for.
I think it's fair to say that right now, any veteran starter who is nicked up this week around the league, and I'm not going to identify any player in particular, but I think any veteran starter around the league who's nicked up right now, does not play in their third preseason game, probably does not play in that team's fourth preseason game, will probably try to practice in that final week leading up to their regular season opener. And in all likelihood, I bet you most of those guys will be listed as game time decisions for opening day kickoff.
Yep.
That's just the way it's going to work.
Yep.
And you know what? It doesn't matter what your name is. Unless you have something that's actually broken or surgery was required, that's the boat that most of these guys are going to fall into. So anybody who tells you otherwise either has a winning lottery ticket from 5 years ago or they got some kind of magical crystal ball, because yep. they don't know the answer.
The other question for both of you guys is, what's going on with Pugh and Richburg? You know, I mean, I like both of them. They both have, you know, great reputation. But the bottom line is, if you really want to look at the line, you know, and you could throw Jerry into it, I don't have as high of expectation in terms of the type of player and that Jerry is. You know, he's been more of a journeyman who's been able to hold down a spot. But you have higher expectations as to what you expect out of Pugh and Richburg. And when you look at the first two games, now, I know, Paul, you've mentioned the 3-4. And so I'll give them a little bit on maybe they don't practice as much against it because they're not going to see it a lot. I get that. Is it that? But at the end of the day, I just see them getting pushed in the backfield and losing at the point of attack. And I think that's been a bigger impact on the line than almost the other concerns of the tackles.
I think it's fair to say that Richburg and Pugh did not have two stellar preseason games to start the summer. I'm not going to dispute that at all. But remember, the Giants are a 4-3 defense themselves. And even when we talk about how the offensive line is supposed to be improving by going up against one of the premier defensive lines in football, they're going up against the 4-3. You know, so they're not exactly breaking their rear ends in practice going up against a great 3-4 team. They're going up against a great 4-3 team. Now, I did a check of the schedule, you know, because I think it was Charlie who wanted to call me out about how many 3-4s of the Giants playing this year. They're going to be playing six of their 14 games, okay? Of their 16 games.
16, yeah.
Are going to be 3-4 teams. So 10 4-3 teams, six 3-4 teams. Now, of those six 3-4 teams, there's another question that becomes an issue here. Which ones of those teams truly have outstanding King Kong size like bull rushers at the nose tackle spot? Because if it's just simply an average 3-4 team and they don't have great size, but they're more technique and speed oriented, the Giants physically have the tools to match up with them. It's only the oversized nose tackle 3-4 team that gives the Giants more trouble. Therefore, that does not, for me, become a huge nightmarish concern, because they're not going to be dealing with that all that much.
Okay.
So you have to kind of look. No team is perfect. No team is going to be able to fit against every scheme exactly the way they want to. This is why they say styles make fights. This is why the Giants have such a great matchup against the Cowboys. It's about styles making fights.
Yep.
That's a style, all right, that I've identified that is a problem for the Giants. And
yep.
that's just the way it is.
I would say one other thing. We talked about Ingram a lot in the offseason and how he was going to be used. I think you saw a play the other night when he was lined up at fullback. It was his best reception maybe of the preseason.
Right.
And it really tells me of why McAdoo is choosing to put him in so many different positions and trying to make him as well-rounded as they can, because if they can do that and it's not predictable that he's just split out into the, you know, into the slot or even in line, but that he could be catching passes. I haven't seen a tight end run through the fullback hole and split the middle and pick up 20 yards. I mean, it's been a long time since we've seen that type of play and that type of versatility. could do wonders. Just get your guys' comments, and then I'll finish up.
Well, I think it could open up the middle of the field. That's where it really could do the most wonders, and I think you saw that based on the play that you're referring to. I would connect the tight end usage to the running back usage the same way. I think that when certain running backs are on the field and they line them up in a variety of spots, that they want to be able to showcase similar versatility so that defenses are kept on their toes. For example, when Shane Vereen's in the game, you know, Vereen, we know, can run, and we know he can catch the football. So you have to have a guessing game on defense when Vereen's in. What are the Giants going to do? Is it going to be a run play? Is it going to be a receiving play? I think that if they can get Ingram to that same level, you know, that just adds more danger to the offensive tools that the Giants have.
Perhaps the biggest thing that they've, or challenge, I should say, that they've got, when Vereen's in the game, yeah, not only is it a run threat option, but he's also a very intelligent player, and he knows if Eli's got to call out an audible where he's got to be the guy picking up the hot blitzer.
Pass protection.
He can do it, okay? Because he is a very astute football guy. Now, Evan Ingram, we're asking him to do all these different things versatility-wise as fans. We want to see him do all these crazy things because we want him to be explosive. And we hear Coach McAdoo talk about, we think we can use him in so many different ways, it's going to be great to open up the offense. Well, that is great to hear. But one of the things that Evan Ingram has to be able to do is recognize what's going on at the line of scrimmage. Because if he's going to line up in all these different spots, and now Eli's got to call out audibles because all kinds of other things are going on the defense, if Evan Ingram doesn't get the call right, guess what? His butt's on the bench. Because you can't afford mental errors in those situations, especially if it involves a hot read.
Well, and that was something that Paul Perkins had to experience last season. I remember the Browns game, coincidentally, the team they just played, was almost Paul Perkins' coming out party in pass protection. Remember, there was a game where Jamie Collins came right up the middle. Who was it that stepped up? It was Paul Perkins to give Eli Manning time. So similar to Perkins' development, Engram's in the same boat. In order for him to truly expand upon his versatility, you need to feel confident that if there's a change on the play, on the fly, as you just alluded
That's
to, Paul,
it.
That Eli has confidence that, all right, Ingram, now you're not running through the hole and running deep. You now have the responsibility to pick up the blitzer that's coming on the right or the left.
You know, all of a sudden now, maybe he's got to get that linebacker. He's got to get that corner blitz. He's got to get that safety blitz. Maybe it's simply a chip. He's got to help out the tackle. You know, and if he's not doing that, Eli's in trouble.
You guys are the voice of reason for Giants fans, so keep it up.
All right,
have a good one.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. You got it. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Keisha just joining us. We were talking about injuries earlier in the program on the conference call that Ben McAdoo had with reporters. He mentioned that it's day-to-day for Odell Beckham and Brandon Marshall, but Marshall's dealing with a shoulder injury. Beckham's dealing with an ankle injury. He wouldn't specify the severity of either injuries, and there's no timetable that's been thrown out other than day-to-day. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Justin in Florida. Justin, what's happening?
Yeah, I just want to say I'm a first-time caller. You know, I listen to you guys, you know, every day. I drive an hour to work every day. So, you know, I appreciate you guys going over, you know, a lot of info that I'm looking for every day. But
we appreciate
you
tuning
in. You know, we gotta wait till game one for Flowers. We haven't even gave Flowers one game. What if he plays an unbelievable game against, you know, Dallas right now? What are the fans gonna say? You know?
Well, they're gonna run out of content. That's what they're gonna do.
They'll have to throw away the voodoo doll.
What if he plays an unbelievable game? I mean, then everybody's like, wow. Like, do you apologize? I mean, what can you say to this? You give him a chance. Give him this old line. I mean, we played great against Dallas last year, didn't we?
No, there were two highly contested games. I think the defense played extraordinary in both of those games.
They played well enough to win.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
I mean,
but again, it's a favorable matchup for the Giants, so you expect to win those games.
Right. So just let's give Flowers a chance. Let's stop talking about Flowers already. I mean, that's all I hear every single day. I'm like, Flowers. Yeah, I know. We understand he's not the you know the gold that we're looking for. But what if he has a great year? Isn't that what we're looking for right now? Just
you know what?
Flowers
he just
and just
he,
have a great year. That's
Flowers,
what we hope for.
Flowers simply has to be good enough that he does not impede the progress of this offense. That's all. He just has to be better than what he was last year so that he cuts down on the penalties, because penalties will really hurt a drive. So he's got to cut down on the penalties, and he's got to see what he can do about keeping Eli clean. He's just got to be better. He's just got to be better. He doesn't have to be Jumbo Elliott. He just has to be better. That's all. But here's the problem.
He doesn't have to.
No, he doesn't. He does not. But you know what it comes down to? Honestly, what you have is a chicken and the egg thing. You got the message boards that blow up about the player because they're reading newspaper articles about the player. And then vice versa, because then when the message boards blow up about it, the editors tell the writers, we got to write about this because that's what the fans want to talk about. So it's a chicken and the egg thing. And the entire cycle continues to go and go and go and go and go until there are 50 pins in the voodoo doll. And you know what? I understand. Because every radio station and every editor wants their writer to go to the hot topic. And if the message boards are blowing up about Flowers, then that's where they're going to go. It's the easiest way to go. It's the best way to get clicks and sell newspapers. It's not the most X's and O's way to go. It's not the real football way to go, you know. But how many real football diehards are out there amongst the fans? A great many of them just want to hear the headlines.
We
know,
could put somebody else out there to replace Fluker. I mean, to replace Flowers, and he could do terrible. Then we're like, oh, maybe we should have gave Flowers a chance. So we need to relax. But I was asking, what's the percentage of Fluker taking the starting position right now? Is it low?
Well, I just read the quote. I don't know if you heard it, that Ben McAdoo said in the conference call, and he said that right now they're exploring some options, but he did say that they have still full confidence in John Jerry. I think it's possible, though, that perhaps they could experiment a little on Saturday's game. I wouldn't rule that out, but I also wouldn't say that there's a 95% chance that DJ Fluker is replacing John Jerry either.
And quite frankly, there's still another preseason game after this, and I think that we know right now, since Fluker's not an established starter, I think it's safe to say he probably will play snaps in game four. According to the way McAdoo MO'd it last year, okay, since Fluker's not already established, chances are he plays in game four. So who knows? Maybe he could still wrestle that job away by the time they play the Cowboys. I think everything is in play right now.
Yeah. What I saw with I'm just looking at a little bit. I understand we didn't score a touchdown. That was terrible against the Browns. We should score. But I saw Vereen. He looked really good. So I think that was just exciting for me. We didn't look good as an all-around team, but I'm excited for Vereen because I have a feeling when Vereen just gets a little hot during the game, it just sparks us up. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but there's something about when we start the game and Vereen has a big play, I just feel like out of all the players, I hate to say Vereen, but he's just that kind of guy.
Yeah,
that,
but you know why? There's a logical reason for that. He's one of the best third down backs in football. So if he makes a big play, the odds are it's going to be a third down conversion, which allows you to keep the ball and keep a drive alive. That's why you feel that way. That's a very logical way to explain it.
Yeah, and Odell Beckham and Marshall, they're just day-to-day.
Day-to-day. That's all there is at this point. Anything else is pure speculation.
Especially during the preseason. My goodness, thank you for the call. Because you know what? First of all, there are no official injury reports required by the NFL during the preseason. So let's make that very clear, which is why you're not hearing any of the words probable or questionable or limited or any of that stuff now, because they're not required till you get to the first week of the regular season. So every veteran who's nicked up or banged up during the preseason is virtually day-to-day, unless he's busted his kneecap, ripped his ACL,
more serious injury, of course.
You know, torn a pec. They're all day-to-day right now during the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said you could speculate about everybody on the roster if you really had spare time at this point. But with more than 2 weeks out from the start of the regular season, you know, anybody that says that they definitively know who's going to suit up and who's not going to suit up, I think is right now just getting out the fortune teller theme and trying to run with it.
Yeah.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Mike in Boston. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing all right, Mike. How's things with you? What do you got for us?
Very good. Hey, just real quick, I just wanted to weigh in on a few things. two in particular. There was one caller who had mentioned the possibility of a trade, and I wanted to kind of jump on that because that was something I had been, you know, thinking about with our defensive, especially with the amount of depth. I think it's an awesome problem to have, but eventually we're going to have to cut down. So, you know, I wanted to weigh in on that. But also, before getting into that, the offensive line obviously is a topic that everyone is talking about. And I just wanted to jump in on that because I know, you know, over the past couple of months I've been listening to it. And, you know, obviously going back to the draft, everyone was saying that we should have drafted an offensive lineman. And when you look, you know, Garrett Bowles isn't doing too good. Forrest Lamp tore his ACL. He was, yep. You know, slated
Correct.
To be a guard. And, you know, what one of the better-looking offensive linemen. You're not hearing much about Ryan Ramczyk. I think that Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart have met my expectations in the first two preseason games. I would say they've exceeded them with what I was hoping for. The interior has not looked so good, but I want to get your thoughts on it. My thought is that, you know, maybe – Ben McAdoo is kind of keeping his cards close to his chest, maybe trying some things out. I know that the run game hasn't been spectacular, but, you know, Justin Pugh and Ryan Weston Richburg, I mean, they are proven commodities that I think we kind of know what we're going to get out of them. So I feel that the offensive line has looked pretty good, you know, from what I've seen so far, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that, first of all.
Pretty good. I think you could certainly say that the offensive line, the starters, have been a bit disappointing through the first two preseason games. But the two guys in particular that have caught the most flack, Hart and Flowers, I think Hart's been more of a mixed bag. I think he was much better in game one than he was in game two. And I thought that Flowers actually had two pretty good games.
Okay. And that's kind of what I'm saying. Yeah. Obviously, the guard position, it's crippling our run game, and I get that. But I'm kind of not – my thought is I'm not paying too much attention to it. I should have used that word loosely, saying that they look pretty good. But referring to the tackles, you know, but at any rate, okay. As far as the possibility of trading out a player, I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts. Cornerback is the position that to me looks the scariest at this point just because of the fact that we don't have too much depth after our three, you know, main starters. What are your thoughts? Is there a possibility that maybe we might sign a guy in the next, you know, couple of weeks, maybe, you know, coming off another team? Or is there a possibility that might be, you know, something that they would consider in terms of a trade?
Well, I think signing a guy is always a possibility. I don't think there's anybody out there on the market right now that I think is that attractive that all of a sudden is going to, you know, add to the roster and change things up. Michael Hunter's concussion, I think, complicates matters. Let's see how much progress he makes because I think he's in line to be the fourth cornerback. And right now, if he's sidelined, they may be a little bit nervous because you never know how long a concussion is to deal with. Dante Dion is going to have an opportunity to make another statement against the Jets. We'll see whether or not, you know, they continue to have confidence with him. I think special teams is something that is really going to be a big part of who ultimately locks up a fourth or fifth spot in the cornerback group as opposed to, you know, anything else. Because let's face it, before you even get on the field, you have to be able to contribute on special teams. And Dante Dion, you notice they've been experimenting with him as a punt returner, and they're going to see whether or not, you know, he can handle those responsibilities. That, I think, is going to go a long way. Valentino Blake, we've seen some mixed results. Remember in the first game, he was tested a lot by the Steelers. And one time, Nat Burhey slipped, so he was left on an island. The other time, Kobe Hamilton beat him. So I really think it has to do with what happens in these next two preseason games and whether or not these guys can show the coaching staff that they deserve to have those jobs as opposed to the Giants exploring some other options.
As coach and many others have always said, you're not just competing with guys at training camp. You're also competing with the other guys on the other 31 teams' rosters. And I would say I believe the Giants have radar out on anybody in the back seven, whether they're linebackers or secondary guys who might be able to enhance their depth chart. And, you know, that last weekend when each team is going to wind up cutting those guys, whether or not it's done a few days before or not like you suggest, Lance, you're still going to have about 1,100 guys set free within a few days. And believe you me, every team's pro personnel department is going to be sleepless for days as they try to rope some of these guys in. It's going to be a free agent frenzy trying to help the back end of your depth chart. And I know that makes Len very nervous and it makes him very sad and very upset. I understand, Len, but that's the way you make your team better. And it won't surprise me at all if the Giants sign as many as three new guys on the 53-man roster in the final week leading up to the Cowboys game. Would not shock me at all.
Well, we've seen that before. Remember, Josh Johnson was brought in. Jasper Brinkley was let go. Last-second changes happen all the time. But remember, the biggest difference between this season and last season is, you know, they were fortunate enough that they added Leon Hall right at the beginning of training camp. So they made that veteran move, and Leon Hall was with the team for the duration of camp. He knew the scheme, and they felt confident. Listen, we've got a starting caliber corner as the fourth guy on the depth chart. You know, they don't necessarily have that luxury this season. They have guys that are familiar with the system, but you didn't necessarily add the veteran at the beginning of training camp. If anything, you may make that addition right before the start of the regular season, and you also need to account for the fact that whoever that person may be, you're not going to have the same familiarity with the scheme. So that does change things up a tad.
Right. My thoughts, too, with the corners, you know, we had Leon Hall. You brought him up. You know, we got ripped apart in Green Bay. And obviously, you know, he wasn't one of the starting three. But Antoine Blake, I don't feel very comfortable with him at all. And I'm really hoping, you know, that we're able to get some sort of improvement over him at least. I just feel like he can't keep up with a lot of the receivers that are out there. He's the one that I think I'm the most nervous when I see him in the game. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. Real quick, do you think, and just throwing this question out there, obviously Avery Moss was our fifth-round draft pick. Would there be a possibility of someone like him being traded, or do you think that would be a rare thing to see? You know, someone, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, even if you do give up your fifth-round pick, which I think is highly unlikely, Mike, and we appreciate the phone call, you know, you also have to think about, are you even going to get that much in return at this point that warrants giving him up? So, you know, that's why I would say that that's highly unlikely to happen in terms of a trade. But, I mean, as far as other options, you know, the one thing that I also wanted to throw out was the fact that DRC has been playing safety. Played in the game, and also Ben McAdoo pointed out that he's been utilized at practice. So that's something that you have to take into consideration here. And the reason why I think you got to take that into consideration is because they may be saying to themselves that they want to keep an extra corner or two because of all the injuries, and that's why they're looking for other players to be able to get lined up in other spots so they feel good that, hey, if we keep one less safety, we know DRC can be put in that spot, and that gives us the flexibility to keep an extra corner.
Look, right now, Keaton Robinson is in his second concussion protocol of the summer. They're not going to cut Keaton Robinson. I mean, obviously, he's a guy they want on this team. Why wouldn't they? Well, if he can't get cleared or healed properly by the time they go on to name their 53-man roster, Lance, they're going to have to add another healthy linebacker somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's going to have to come from another position. And that's a very real problem right now. Okay? It's a very real problem. So if you have to start looking at guys who can play both spots so that you're going to be able to steal someone from their room, you got to start doing it.
Well, and that's why I think that's part of the rationale as to why DRC has been moved around, because they're looking for players if they can play linebacker and defensive line like Devon Kennard, if they can play safety and corner. Then you say to yourself when you're building your 53-man roster, Paul, well, we were thinking of keeping an extra linebacker, we were thinking of keeping an extra corner, but maybe we don't have to do that based on the fact that we have this player who can be moved around.
A coach's worst nightmare, in the final 2 weeks of the preseason is that one of his keeper 53 guys gets dinged up or nicked up. Yeah, it's worse if he breaks a leg and he's on IR and you lose him for the season. Let me clarify. That's the worst. The second worst thing is if he gets nicked up, dinged up, and they say, well, it could be 2 to 4 weeks. That's horrible. Because now you got to keep him on the 53, okay? You can't just write him off for the year and IR him. You got to keep him, but you don't have him for opening day. And now you're short a healthy body who can dress the position who you really might need in the game. That's a horrible thing for every coach to deal with in this league. They hate that. If a guy is in limbo because now you're losing that roster spot and basically he's just an inactive player. You know right off the top, he's one of my 53, but he's not going to be active on game day. We've lost somebody at the position. And if he was a guy who was supposed to be a significant part in your snap count, oh my goodness, now it's a huge headache.
Well, it reminds me what you just laid out about Will Johnson last season. You know, Will Johnson was banged up in the preseason.
Well, at least they were able to IR him early enough.
No, but I guess my point is sometimes you have to make those tough decisions before the season starts.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to say to yourself, we want to keep the guy, but if we place him on IR, there's a chance we lose him for the season depending on when you place him on IR. Because remember, Will Johnson was placed on IR before the season start. That means you can't bring him back. And then you're also weighing what Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese talked about after the season. Do we warrant keeping him on the roster, especially if we only think he's going to be on the field for 6 or 7 plays per game? Now, with a cornerback, you know, using Michael Hunter as an example, I think you could get a lot more usage out of Michael Hunter than a fullback if you're comparing the two situations. But if a concussion lingers, you don't know the timeline. I mean, look at Luke Kuechly last season, Paul, from the Carolina Panthers. I mean, Kuechly had a concussion. He turned out to miss a number of games. And the Panthers, I'm sure at one point, were wondering, you know, I mean, what do we do?
Look, again, there's never a timetable on a concussion. Period. Never. There's no, there's nothing we think. He's got a concussion. He's in protocol. They'll let us know when he can come back. That's it.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Dre is in Rochester. Dre, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hi.
Doing all right, Dre. What do you got?
Speaking about injuries, Greg Williams, I'm kind of sick of this man because the play before Odell got hurt, his first catch, number 20, went for his legs. And Brandon Marshall didn't have to get hit like that by Peppers. There's something going on with Greg Williams, and I'm really tired of him being around in the league. And, Paul, do you think there's any substance to Dante Diem being in being first team reps? And I'll take your answers offline.
All right, Dre.
Okay, the wind kind of impeded his last question.
I believe he was asking about Dante Dion's chances of ultimately making the 53.
I mean, you know how I feel about him. I felt it last year. He was my dark horse of the season last year as the undrafted rookie free agent who would make the team. I have him on my 53. And the interception he made the other night, I know there was a penalty away from the play which took away the pick. It was a sensational play. And that's the kind of play he made at Boise State when he was there, you know, playing college ball. He is a baller. I mean, this kid has a heart the size of Mount Rushmore. I know he's only 5'9". I get that. But he is not afraid of anybody. Now, are there going to be matchups that are unfavorable to him that he simply can't win no matter how hard he tries? He'll reach, and he can't get to the carrot. I get that. It's going to happen. So the point is, if the Giants have to use him in a game, they got to make sure now that they put him in situations where he is in matchups that he's got a chance to compete. And if the other team can find a way to isolate him in a favorable matchup for them, they'll try to do it. And if they do, God bless them. Maybe the pass rush will get there and the ball won't arrive. That's just the price you got to pay when you're 5'9". But this kid can play football. Yeah, he's on my 53.
I still think special teams is going to really decide his fate in the long run, and I think we still need to see a little bit more out of him, in just my personal opinion on special teams.
With Michael Hunter in concussion protocol
It helps his cause. There's no doubt about that,
and
Paul.
Again, there's no joy in that, okay? Let me make that very clear. There is no joy in anybody being hurt, or especially in a concussion protocol. But Dante Dion now moves up a spot on the depth chart right now. He has to. He's healthy. He's available. He can play.
It's just that, once again, you know, I look at guys like Charles James, who had competed for spots before, and they also showed to me just as much energy, to your point, as Dante Dion, and ultimately fell short and didn't make the roster. Now, with that being said,
Dion's more of a ball hawk, though.
Well, and Spags,
better ball skills
and
than
Spags
Charles James
has
had.
Been very high on Dante Dion. He was high on him last season at this time, where he liked his energy, he liked what he brought to training camp. He liked what he brought to the daily routine of practices, and ultimately There was a lot more competition here, so maybe you're right. Maybe the injury bug is going to help his cause. It certainly, to me, gives him a great opportunity on Saturday as well as Thursday, and a lot will depend on whether or not Michael Hunter can get back on the field. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Chris in Houston. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, guys, two preseason games into the season, and I already have agita. It's not good.
Understood.
Okay, one offense, and then I wanted to address what Paulie was saying earlier about who you're gonna take out of a room. From an offensive perspective, this dates back to last year. I don't think Eli has any confidence in the line because he is just not stepping into his throws. His footwork looked terrible, and you can't say Geno is playing in front of a better line. Geno's throws are better. Decision making not as good, obviously, but his throws, he's got more zip on the ball. Eli's thrown off the back foot, so that's really been bothering me.
Well, hold on. Well, let's address that. First of all, I don't think you're 100% right on Eli. Actually, he's thrown the ball extremely well this summer. McAdoo even said it's the best camp he's had since he's been here in 4 years in the organization. So I would disagree with that, if only because, if you've been in practice every day, you'd see the whole body of work a little bit better. So I don't think Eli's been throwing the ball poorly or that his mechanics are messed up. I will, however, say that you're right about Geno Smith. He does have a gun, a really, really strong gun of an arm. And he has shown the zip on his passes. I would never, ever disparage Geno Smith's arm strength because he can rifle that pigskin like nobody's business. And there's no question about that. So that part of your statement I'll agree with 100%. Now, the rest of what makes a quarterback, Geno Smith certainly has things he's got to work on. But in terms of being able to wing it, he can wing it.
Well, okay, before I hit to the other side of the ball, just to counter what you were saying, I'm not there in practice. I'm obviously in Houston, so I rely on you for that information. But I will say this. I'm talking about in the game. In practice, he might be doing great, but in the game, his footwork, just not stepping into the throw. So hopefully that improves. But as far as on the defensive side of the ball, I'm very concerned with Keenan Robinson as well with the concussions. One guy that I really am getting attracted to, and you guys brought him up and some of the players did, but I'm liking Calvin Munson. I'm not saying that he could replace him, but I'm liking what he's doing. In my opinion, if we have to take somebody out of a room, I mean, you guys know more than I do, but I'm looking at the offensive side of the ball. And what I mean by that is I don't want to carry three quarterbacks, to be quite honest with you. I call me crazy, but I'd like to see Webb be the number two quarterback. I'd like to see him get some more action. I'd like to see really three tight ends, definitely not having Ty. I like Ingram, Adams, and Ellison, maybe Lacoste. And then as far as with the receivers, you know, I'm thinking five receivers, OBJ, Marshall, Shepard, Harris, and take one between King, Poe, and Lewis. What are your thoughts?
Powell's not on the team anymore. So he was waived injured. Maybe he gets brought back and put on IR, but he's no longer an option. I would think, though, if a lot of these guys are banged up, they're probably going to lean towards keeping six wide receivers because I think you're going to need the extra bodies if not everybody's 100% at the start of the season.
Yeah, and, you know, the whole thing about the quarterbacks is just it's a complicated soup. It really is because McAdoo's intention, and he strongly suggested and hinted to us when they drafted Davis Webb, that in a perfect world, he sits as the number three the entire season and never even has a chance to be the number two. That's the way they designed it coming out of the spring. Now, as I've said to you ever since I saw the kid, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point he challenges and becomes the number two guy. I've been saying that now for over a month. Turns out that challenge may be a little more real than some of us thought and may come quicker than even some of us thought. But, boy, that is risky business. If you think you have a Super Bowl contender, a step away from being a champion, and you're going to put Davis Webb into that number two spot where he could be one snap away from running the show, that's a lot of bowling balls to put on that rookie's shoulder. And I know they don't want to do it. They don't want to do it.
Super Bowl contender, do you really want to see Geno or Josh in that position?
Well, if they have more command of the system and they have more experience, I mean, the coaching staff is probably going to have more confidence.
I will say this. It may be that in 2 weeks, maybe Davis Webb is the best option, and maybe he has to become the number two. I'm not going to tell you that that's impossible. I'm not going to tell you that it can't happen because you guys all know out there I'm a big Davis Webb guy. Heck, I wanted the Giants to draft him. So I'm not going to back off that train now. I do think it's a little soon. It's a little bit much to bite off. Do I think it's possible? Yes. Is it the preferred way to go? No. Is there another way you could steal another body from another position? Maybe. I'm afraid they're going to steal a tight end, to be perfectly frank with you, because I really like four of the tight ends on this team. But the problem is, I don't think they're going to be able to keep four, and they may have to steal one of those guys. And I hate to see the guy who's going to go.
Right. Well, I just want Davis to get a quarter. If we could get him a quarter this week, it's unfortunate he couldn't play this past week, but I'd love to see him play a quarter.
Would not surprise me, okay? And we have not talked to the coach about his snap count plans yet. It would not surprise me to see Davis Webb get a big chunk of time against the Jets.
Well, and even if he does it, he's going to get plenty of playing time against the Patriots. I would pretty much expect that he'll get a lot of reps in that game, which is only a few days after the Saturday game. And thanks for the phone call, Chris. But I think that, to me, it's a risky proposition right now.
It is.
To lean towards keeping just two and having Davis Webb your backup.
You know, but then again, look what happened with Dallas last year. They had to go down to their number three on the depth chart, and yet they were a bona fide contender,
but
as it turned out.
That was because of an injury, though. Here, you don't have that. When your back's against the wall, yes, sometimes you just have to make those
decisions.
Sometimes. They lost Romo and they lost Kellen Moore.
Sometimes it just happens to be.
But here, if everybody's fully healthy, I don't know if they then would be forced to say, we're going to have to move Davis Webb up the depth chart.
It's not the preferred scenario. But again, is anyone going to confuse Josh Johnson or Geno Smith with Jeff Hostetler or Jeff Rutledge?
No,
they're not.
Don't think that would happen
at
all. It's just a matter of comfort level.
McAdoo has basically said in a roundabout way by saying if we're not happy with the number two competition, Davis certainly has a chance to be considered. What he has said to you is that the door has been left open. Neither one of the number two guys has slammed it shut.
And that is true, but in fairness, I think sometimes coaches do that also to sort of light a fire under players as well. I mean, you don't want to necessarily say to them
that they have... Well, I don't think
McAdoo's
looking to light fires. I think he's saying flat out, this is an issue.
Well, and that's part of lighting a fire under a player.
I think he's being honest.
To also tell the guys, listen, you know, the play hasn't necessarily stood out to where we expect it
to
be.
But sometimes lighting a fire is more propaganda and smoke than it is real, because you're just trying to play psychological with a guy.
Well, that's what
I don't think there's any psychological ploy here. I think he's being honest.
I think it could be a little combination of both, if you were to ask me my opinion.
Okay.
I think you could read into
it multiple ways. You're entitled.
Yeah, we'll see. And I think that Josh Johnson obviously has to feel coming into this game after what Geno did in the last contest that maybe now he can move back in front of the pack, depending on how many reps are given out.
I don't think either one of those two guys could feel secure right now, to be honest with you.
Well, no, not feel secure. I'm just saying if I'm Josh Johnson, now I feel maybe I have a little bit leverage because I didn't get many of opportunities in the previous preseason
game. We'll see.
That's how it may turn out. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Cecil's in Brooklyn. Cecil, what's happening? How we doing, Cecil?
Hey, how you doing, guys? First-time caller. I'd like to see the Giants beef up the offensive line. Richburg and Pugh, I think, in the middle are really small. That's the problem that they're having against the 3-4 teams. I'd like to see them move Pugh to center and put Jerry at guard and just beef it up, because it's a problem with Eli stepping up in the pocket in the running game. They're just getting pushed around in the middle. And, you know, the tackles are holding up. But if you can't step up, you know, that's a problem.
Look, I just had a reader send me a message on Twitter, and I think it was a very wise and admirable tweet. It was from Young Rando 100, and he was building off of my comment about the Giants having trouble with 3-4s who possess a King Kong-sized nose tackle. And he was suggesting that Logan in Kansas City, who I know is 6'2", he's a big-time, big frame, not necessarily big in weight, but a big-framed nose tackle. He was suggesting Ellis in Oakland. Now, if you consider them a 3-4 or 4-3, when Mack is up on the line, a lot of people consider them truly a 4-3, the way they play him.
They move him around.
But they do move him. So if you want to use them as an example, well, Ellis is the nose tackle, and he's a big, big man, all right? So he'd be a problem. And certainly, Kansas City Logan, Brockers with the Rams. He's a big dude. So I think those are the three teams right now that if you say their front, their scheme is a matchup problem for the Giants, I understand that. But that's it. those are the teams that fit into this problematic 3-4 with the big dude
right,
in the middle.
But,
that's it. Three.
Right, but
three.
But
that's
think,
it.
I think it goes beyond just the 3-4 team. I think it's just a big tackle, a big nose guy in general. They're not getting that push up the middle. You know, and I don't think it has anything to do with – I mean, yes, 3-4 teams they struggle with, but they're struggling with just big guys and strong guys in general, just getting that push in the middle.
Here's what I will say to you.
I think Pugh is scheme versatile. He can move
to
center.
He is. Well, they actually – when he came out at Syracuse – there was talk that he actually could play center in the NFL. That's the kind of versatility that he was projected to have. So it should not surprise anybody when the word center comes up in regards to Justin Pugh. But here's what I will tell you, okay? I think the Giants are, again, heavily considering keeping a fullback. And part of the reason is because of some of that interior problems that they've had matching up with some bigger and stronger and more powerful defenses. I do think that Shane Smith's work in the first two preseason games, especially on special teams, have also enhanced his chances of making the roster. And again, this is another reason why I think now, and I didn't think this a couple of weeks ago, I think the Giants are thinking more along the lines of three tight ends and a fullback as opposed to going with the four tight ends. I really think that's the way they're starting to change their thinking at the moment, because Shane Smith has shown them some pop and some muscle.
All right, Cecil, appreciate the phone call. All right, we lost Cecil. We want to try to squeeze in a few more phone calls here before we wrap up. How about Ruben in New York City? Ruben, what's happening?
Hey, I have a couple questions for you guys. One of them being, why is there so little information on Odell's injury? And why do you think Ben McAdoo is so, like, reluctant to, tell us how severe it is?
Well, I got a better question for you. I got a better question for you that I want Lance to answer. I got a better question for you, though. What NFL veteran player who has been nicked up over the course of the last couple of weeks do you know detailed information about? Name me one. Name me one. Just one.
But, usually just one. We get, a timetable.
No. But it's preseason.
Yeah.
It's preseason. They are not required to give you any specific injury information. The NFL does not require it.
The other thing
Who's giving it out?
I mean, the other thing that I think is also important to ask is, I mean, of what benefit is it for Ben McAdoo to give out detailed information about Odell Beckham at this point? I mean, who is it benefiting? As long as the coaching staff and the team knows, why would you give out information to anybody else? I mean, who needs to know that information, Ruben, at this point?
And quite frankly, okay, we discussed this a little while ago, these types of injuries that we're talking about, they're not going to really know. You know,
You guys think he'll be ready for week one?
I right now, I mean, it's just pure speculation. As Ben McAdoo
says,
day-to-day.
It's irresponsible.
Yeah.
It's truly irresponsible to say right now that you can bet he is or is not going to play in that game. That is irresponsible.
All right. And what do you guys think about how Eric Flowers has been playing?
He's played pretty well.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it a lot. I think that you have to look at his progress in terms of no penalties in the first two preseason games. And I think you also need to look at the fact that, you know, we talked about the interior of the offensive line as areas that need to improve in addition to necessarily just focusing on the tackle position. I think if you're going to evaluate the offensive line, you got to look at the group as a whole. Eric Flowers, to me, is the easy poster child to turn to because of some of his struggles over the last few seasons. I think, though, the fact that the penalties have been non-existent in the preseason is a sign of progress. But ultimately, we're not going to truly tell until the regular season starts.
Yeah, I really think he's a long-term player.
All right.
What else you got for us, Ruben?
Besides for that, do you think right now the running back spot is – the number one spot is really up for grabs? And you think Wayne Gallman has, a chance to be, backup second?
Wayne Gallman had a drop pass and a fumble the other night, which did not help his cause if he wants to challenge for that spot by opening day. Let's put it that way.
I know, but besides for that, I thought...
you know, you can't put the ball on the ground. You know, there's not a coach alive who's going to be happy with that.
Yeah, I think if
Have a good one, Ruben. Yeah, we got to run. We got one more call
If anybody challenges Perkins, in my opinion, I think it'd be Orleans Darkwood before it'd be Wayne Gallman. Let's head back to the lines. Nick is in the Meadowlands. What's up, Nick?
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
How we doing?
I don't want to see Pugh moving in at center, even though he probably could.
I highly doubt that's going to be happening.
I agree with you.
You know, I agree with you guys. You know, we've played a couple teams, you know, that play in the 3-4, and that's a problem, you know. You know, whenever a guy's facing your head up, you know what I mean? So it's a little different story. But like I said, I think they'll get it together. I think we need to, you know, remember that this is preseason, you know. I've seen teams go 4-0 like the Lions and not win a game in the season.
Sure.
So let's remember that. This is preseason. And Odell Beckham, we saw him walking and running around on the sideline. I think he'll be fine. I don't really necessarily care if he plays until week one. I want him to be ready for Dallas.
I'm sure the organization feels the same way. Snap count for him, the next two preseason games, irrelevant.
Yeah, and I think I've been watching Eric Flowers really closely, and I haven't been able to talk to you, Paul, but last week, you know, people were calling in and beating him up. You know, I didn't see anything wrong with anything. I mean, the one sack was the guy's coming free anyway. It's a screen.
I will only say this. You know? On the game the other night, he did get bull rushed in Cleveland on the Geno Smith sack. Now, he didn't hold up maybe as well or as long as you'd like him to, but the truth is Geno could have gotten rid of the ball and prevented the sack, and he didn't. And Geno also ran right into the sack.
Yeah, run to your right.
So Geno did not help his cause. So Flowers did like an okay job, but he did get pushed back into the pocket, and ultimately it was a sack. I gave him a negative on that play, but he only got beat three times in the entire first half that he played the other night against Cleveland. He only lost three snaps, and I'll take that. I'll take that any Sunday. Okay.
I'm tired of people like acting like he's the worst player in football.
Yeah,
history,
well,
you know what I mean.
You know,
because I saw these guys get beat the other night on the stunt, Jerry and Hart. You know.
Yeah.
But the interior is what I'm really seeing, and we know what those guys can do on the interior. I mean, I'd like to see Fluker in the future if it gets worse, but, I mean, we know what these guys can do once it comes game time. So I think they're going to work it together. And I saw some good things. I really did. Like that pass down the sideline with Marshall, he could have caught that. But my eyes weren't on Marshall. Guess where my eyes were?
No, I know what you were
thinking. I was watching Odell Beckham, and guess what? He was wide open. That slant that he loves to run across the middle. I can see it now. That's what's going to be happening in regular season. They're going to be paying attention up here. Go ahead and bring that safety up top, because guess what? And now you got a guy, Evan Engram, and I think we got a good tight end, fellas.
All right, Nick.
I like what I see with this kid. I mean, that missed pass over the middle with Eli, he threw it a little flat. That would have been a nice touchdown. But, I mean – I'm really optimistic. Eric Flowers did a good job.
I can tell.
People. And remember, these two guys he's faced these last 2 weeks are going to be really good NFL players.
Oh, Miles Garrett was the top overall pick. Absolutely.
And T.J. Watt. They're going to be really good players, God willing, you know?
Yeah, well, listen, he's going to see a lot of other talented players over the course of the season, too. And, Nick, we're going to let you go.
Thank you.
Hey, Lance, one thing, Lance.
Yeah.
Lance, I forget when it was, but a caller was saying it earlier today about Eli like being skittish, and I remember a guy asked you, I think it was last month, about, you know, when did that happen last season? You saw him like not trusting the line a little bit, and I think when did they play the Redskins first, third game?
Well, when Baker landed on him,
a lot of people
think that did have some effect on him the rest of the season.
Baker hit him hard.
It's certainly a theory that's been out there.
Yeah.
All right, take care of it, Nick.
All right, good. Nick, appreciate the phone call. You got it. All right, that's going to wrap up things for us. Yes, on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate all the phone calls. Appreciate all the tweets. We'll speak to you tomorrow up and running again at 10 a.m. Eastern. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your day here on Giants.com. Have a good one.